This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, August 2, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. When PragerU announced that it believed Google was skewing results for searches of PragerU, the result was a rather large self-own. But the claim that big platforms for speech may be illegally biased against conservatives reveals either a misunderstanding of the relevant federal law or a refusal to appreciate that the First Amendment protects both speech and association. Cato's Matthew Feeney comments. PragerU, shorthand for Prager University, is a website. I think it's fair to call it an advocacy organization that tries to demystify a lot of issues for their audience, and recently posted on Twitter a couple of things. One is that according to them, they are prohibited from purchasing ads on Twitter. And another was an image of a Google autocomplete form in which the autocomplete seemed to indicate that they were going to be pointed toward results that would give people a negative impression of PragerU. A lot of people jumped in and said, "Hey, I do that same autocomplete thing, and I get very different results," which of course is sort of how algorithms work when it comes to what Google thinks you might like to see. And a lot of this, you know, my inclination is to say, oh, well, you know, you just don't understand how a lot of this stuff works. But my inclination is also, if you do understand how this stuff works, it seems like a pretty cynical way to sort of beef up your audience. So for the benefit of our listeners, what is the fundamental mistake, if they are indeed making a mistake, that PragerU is making with respect to how they are treated on internet platforms?
Well, that's a good place to start. I think it's worth emphasizing what you outlined at the beginning, namely that, unsurprisingly, people will get different search results depending on the machine that they're using Google from. Many listeners will be familiar with the series of tweets that you've just discussed, showing that when people type in certain search terms such as PragerU is, you'll get autocomplete recommendations that sometimes are unflattering to PragerU, but it's worth emphasizing that Google is trying to give users the best results based on a host of factors, and two users will get different search results. Our colleague Julian had quite a bit of fun, I think, tweeting examples of this, and in preparation for this podcast, I compared my Google autocomplete results with my colleague Emily Eakins, and we have different search autocomplete recommendations, and that's not a surprise. But this kind of concern is fitting into an important debate that's happening at the moment, namely, how should the government be regulating so-called big tech, and that applies to Google, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, the big ones. And PragerU, I think, is an especially important player in this debate because its founder, Dennis Prager, was invited recently by Senator Cruz to testify on Google censorship. And this is important. When people with that kind of reach are taking part in debates that could change the internet fundamentally, I think it behooves us to consider their claims and to take account of the fact that oftentimes these accusations of censorship or bias are based on a misunderstanding of how these companies work and function. But more worryingly, the implication for such understanding is a change to law, which would change the internet as we know it.
So what is that misunderstanding?
I think it's fair to say that there are some people who believe that there is a concerted, organized, anti-conservative campaign in Silicon Valley, and that employees at companies such as Facebook, YouTube, Twitter are taking active steps to make sure that fewer people can see conservative content. What's interesting about this claim is that I think it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. The organization NetChoice, for example, took the decision to analyze YouTube's treatment of PragerU. PragerU puts out a ton of videos that people can find on YouTube quite easily. But what's interesting is some YouTube users will opt into something called restricted mode, whether they have children or personal preferences, which restricts the number of videos that you might see if the videos include sexual situations, violent, profanity, the discussion of mature subjects. And what NetChoice found is that only 12% of PragerU videos are actually put in these categories, so are in restricted mode. That's only 12%, but compared to The Daily Show, The Young Turks, and Democracy Now!, which are hardly right-wing channels, PragerU seems to fare rather favorably. More than half of Daily Show videos, almost three-quarters of Young Turks videos are put in this restricted mode. And I think once people consider that, it shouldn't be that surprising. If you use profanity a lot, which certainly can show up in some of these videos that we've discussed, that will impact restricted mode. But also discussions of sexual situations, trans issues, discussions about gun violence, all that puts you at risk of having videos restricted. And that's the kind of example of data and analysis that I wish we saw more of, because PragerU, with these accusations of anti-conservative bias, are seeking to change a crucial piece of legislation, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act.
All right. So Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, how does it treat platforms like Facebook, Twitter, Google, and others?
Section 230 was passed in 1996, and it's been described as, I think, not with that much hyperbole, as the legislation that created the internet as we know it, or at least allows the internet as we know it to function. The crucial part of Section 230 that people are constantly discussing these days is Section 230C1, which reads, "No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider." And what that means is that Facebook, for example, cannot be treated as the publisher of your Facebook post, Caleb. It does not, despite what many people seem to think, make a distinction between platforms and publishers. For example, the New York Times is a publisher. It publishes op-eds and articles, but it also hosts a comment section, which enjoys 230 protection. And it's a very, very important piece of legislation because absent this kind of protection from liability, you can wave goodbye to social media as we know it. So there is no distinction in 230 between platforms and publishers. Again, it's talking about interactive computer services. But another misunderstanding associated with Section 230 is that it's somehow predicated on some demonstrated political neutrality. This is, for baffling reasons, constantly mentioned by Senator Cruz, who is very involved in these issues. But the fact is, and this is important, let's grant that even if there is a concerted anti-conservative effort in Silicon Valley and that they are actively engaging in what people are describing as censorship, it would be completely legal for them to do this. And this puts libertarians, I think, in an interesting position where we're trying to talk about policy, about the importance of a vibrant, entrepreneurial, functional internet. But we want to also make sure that people know that the freedom of speech and a limited government means that private firms should be left to make up their own rules about what content they allow. So even if it was the case that YouTube was trying to actively censor, as they put it, PragerU, it wouldn't be illegal, and nor should it be.
You know, maybe it's too soon to tell. Are you aware of PragerU doing a deep dive into Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act?
Well, it depends what you mean by deep dive. There have been they've certainly filed a few lawsuits. They've lost every single one that they've bought. I find it hard to believe that someone at PragerU hasn't done some sort of deep dive on 230. It's fine, I think, to have a discussion about maybe amending 230. Senator Hawley, for example, has introduced amendments, and there have been discussions on the left and the right about maybe tweaking it. But I don't think that means if you want it amended, that you should misconstrue what it says currently. We should all endeavor to be accurate when talking about what 230 says. And if you're not happy with it, then suggest amendments or changes, but don't misrepresent what it actually requires.
Matthew Feeney directs Cato's Project on Emerging Technologies. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.